Yeah, let's rock this bitch.
This is Femme Strong, the podcast by, for, and about women in strength sports. I'm Jess.
I'm Britt.
Welcome to the podcast about strength sports that is not dominated by a male voice. And good evening. Welcome to the Monday after the Arnold, even though we're recording this before the Arnold. We are waiting with bated breath to find out what the mystery event is for the Amateur Strongman World Championships. We don't know yet, so I don't know if my predictions are right. Everyone will know in a week and a half for us. It'll already have happened when you're all listening to
and
this.
So. Your predictions were released on episode 2.
Yes.
For season 2.
Go listen to my predictions, not only for the mystery event, but also for who's going to win the women's classes. And talk about the men. There's enough people to talk about them. That's why we started this podcast. Anyways, how's training?
Training's going pretty good. Doing a lot more singles than I've ever done in a prep, ever.
Okay.
Because I'm still 7 weeks out from the APF Women's Pro-Am. Mm-hmm. And I'm not used to this many singles that far out. I'm really used to like sets of five this far out, you know?
Really?
So, yeah. But it's going pretty good. Definitely projected for hopefully a PR total, but ultimately this meet, I'm just trying to go to have fun and like meet a lot of the internet friends, you know, and just have a good time. So we'll see. Hopefully we're putting together a good total because then 15 weeks later, I'll turn around and do the American Pro. So it's
So are you feeling like, sorry, just a reminder to everyone, we've got not one, but two dogs here. and they're excitable and knocking my charger over. Anyways, are you feeling like your second meet of the year, you're going to be like feel more competitive, or is it still going to be the same vibe for you?
I definitely think I'll feel a bit more competitive with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I'm not trying to like say that I don't care about this first meet. I really, really care about this first meet, but it's a part of the process of falling back in love right now.
Right.
I just want to have
episode one, season two.
I just want like a meet where I just genuinely, it's laughs and good times and like core memories.
Yes,
you know, and
yes.
I thought it was a great opportunity to do so. There's gonna be like 100 women competing ish so yeah, I think
so
the pro day, there's over 40 of us. I think there's like 48 of us or something.
Dang.
So yeah, it'll be, I mean, it's a great meet to choose for that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm sure there's gonna be quite a few women who are breaking records and such. I'll do a preview in next episode. Or the episode after.
Yeah.
Episode after.
Yeah. Two episodes around. No, just
but,
two.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's pretty much how it's going. It's going, you know, I'm finally back up to four plates and stuff. And I don't know.
On bench.
It's on bench. On bench.
So Jessica Springer over here.
But yeah, it's going pretty good. How's training going for you?
It's good. I am on my first deload of my own programming. So I'll do well. So I have my next competition now. I don't have the opportunity to register for it yet, but they released it. More on that later in our news section. But it's in August, and so I was able to, with my block periodization, which is a form of training for those of you who don't know, well, form of programming that works backwards from your competitions. And the contest in August happens to be exactly 12 weeks out from World Strongest Woman, and it's the qualifier for World Strongest Woman. So I was able to plan everything out backwards. And so I'll have two more hypertrophy blocks, then two strength blocks, then a power block, and then a competition peak block up into August. So it was fun to like finally be able to put values to it. And I am going to try to auto regulate a little bit more, so deloads might happen more frequently or less frequently. But more specifically, I've been doing front squats And it's been going really, really well. I was working with my chiropractor on, like, my bracing for the front squat. I almost always used to have my chin up, and he wanted me to tuck my chin like I would for a back almost squat. Like,
yeah.
And it is a game changer. And then I am back in heels again, lifters, for the first time. And I won't necessarily do that when I'm in a back squat, but for the front squat, it's, like, giving me that just extra compensation for my ankle mobility so I can actually get ass to grass. So it's going really well. I also am finally back out there hiking after the Portland quote winter, says the Wisconsinite. And my plan this summer is to work up towards doing all of Wildwood Trail in Portland in a day. This is not strength sport related, but it is doing hobbies outside of strength sport related, which is something I would advocate for. But Wildwood Trail is a 30-mile long trail. So it would be like a 5 a.m. to like 9 p.m. hike, depending on how many stops I take. But so I'm trying to plan my training for that alongside my training for Strongman, giving Strongman the priority, but making it so that I'm still prioritizing the hiking. But yeah, so.
You dual sport athlete, you.
Haven't done anything like that since high school. So I only did one sport in college. Britt did more than one in college.
I wasn't trying to whip my dick out. Metaphorically speaking.
That's that. Big lifts.
Yeah, big lifts. So, sorry, I'm just going to clear my brain.
It's okay.
And I said clear my brain instead of my throat, I guess. So, I'm going to be doing some big lifts from the Ghost Clash, but I did also want to have a quick mention here. Britt Chown, from California, she finally, and I say finally because she's been pulling this number in the gym like it's nothing, but she deadlifted 500 on the platform. So hell yeah, Britt, way to go. She did that the same weekend as the Ghost Clash. So I felt like it didn't get the recognition that it deserved, so yeah.
And go over to our Instagram, like that post. Go to her page, like that post. She deserves the community's support and congratulations for that awesome-ass lift.
And she's a nice human while at it.
She's awesome.
So I'm going to go ahead and move forward to the Ghost Clash review.
For our big lifts.
A lot of big lifts there. So first off, I just want to, from the top, explain why I'm going to be mentioning the names in order that I am. So this meet was qualified based on dots. So I think it was like 475 and up or something. And all of the other WRPF meets in the Pro Series are being scored and qualified for by dots, but for some reason the choice was made to rank this meet by Wilks. So we've mentioned coefficients before, but these are just two different types of coefficients. And the importance of that, so we'll get into how ranking works later in this episode. But the importance of that is that it can drastically change who brings home a bunch of money. So, especially in these professional meets. So, it was an interesting choice, and I just wanted to give credit where it was due for the folks who would have ranked with thoughts, and then also give credit where it's due because, like it or not, this was a Wilkes meet. So,
starting. Even though the qualification
was with thoughts.
Got it. Continue.
So yeah, so starting with, since this was a meet that has a pro day and an amateur day, I just want to do some notable mentions from our amateur day. So Olivia Devato, she matched her wrap total with a raw total.
Damn.
Yeah. So that's significant because that means that she had a huge PR total for her raw total, but she was able to get the exact same total while competing raw, but she did previously in wraps, just to clarify. So that's huge. She just had a great day also. She's made a lot of technique changes, and you could see it pay off. So it was pretty cool. And then Abigail, and her name was actually wrong on the results. It is Narvaez. They had it as Narvaez. So or every other meet that she's ever competed in was wrong. So probably this one.
Statistically speaking, yes.
Yeah. But yeah, at first I was like, this is this person's first meet ever? What? But no, she's very much competed before, and this was a 10-point dots increase for her. So congratulations, Abigail. Excellent work. And moving on to our pro day. So based on dots, Yelena Espinoza would have gotten third.
Mm-hmm.
She had a 75-point dots increase from last year's Kern. That is dramatic. That's a lot of points. Dude. Yeah, typically you're like, it'd be amazing to have a 10-point jump in a year. Right. So that's massive. And that means that she also put over 100 pounds on her total.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
In a year.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were talking about her being like the surprise, like, you know, how does it feel? I think she was asked in an interview, like, how does it feel to be the person that nobody picked? And she was like, that was a weird way of phrasing it.
Right.
She's just not as forthcoming on her social media about her training. She doesn't really post training videos. And I mean, it really shows this huge blind spot we have in the sport when you're only competing like once, maybe twice a year at this elite level. If you're not training or posting your training, like, you don't know. Nobody knows.
Yeah. Or similarly, in Strongman, there's a lot of like old school lifters who like maybe don't even have social media.
Mm-hmm.
And today on one of the Facebook groups, like I'm in a few Strongman Facebook groups, someone like posted about this guy, someone posted their training partner and like said, oh, like he's prepping for the Arnold and he's doing this huge deadlift. And this person was like, is he even doing the Arnold? Has anyone ever heard of him? And a bunch of us were like, yeah, dude, like he like was a national champion like 6 years ago. It's just like he's not one of the up and comers and he doesn't have social media or he's not active on his social media. And I think there's quite a few people who they've been in the sport for a really long time and they don't pay attention to the Instagram club.
A million percent. Yeah. So and then based on Wilkes, so I'm going to go back and forth here. Based on Wilkes, Haley Hill got third. She actually went 5 for 9, so not the day that she wanted, right? But that really speaks to her strength. She was still top three.
Damn.
It's not like she was, you know, way off from her previous performances. It just clearly wasn't her day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that does happen. And, you know, we had heard some feedback about the environment, and that's the hard thing about these days is like, you know, you don't know if you train in North Dakota. Haley Hill is not from North Dakota, but if you train in the cold and then you go to Miami, which is in a different time zone, in a place that a lot of places there don't have AC, including this meet, right? And it's humid and hot and sticky, and it's what you're not used to training
in. I hate like, competing in the South, dude.
It's rough.
I've never lived further south than Madison, Wisconsin. Portland is further north than Madison, Wisconsin, fun fact. And I cannot handle it.
Let me tell you something. So I lived in Phoenix for a few years, as a lot of you know. And we always had our meets in like the most air conditioned places, right? I mean, it's Phoenix. It's 122 degrees
outside.
Everyone
has air conditioning.
Yeah. Until COVID happened. And there was a full year where, well, a full 9 months where nobody could figure out what to do. So they just hosted outdoor meets.
Ugh.
And I was like, y'all.
I would be so sunburnt.
Y'all.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I've done strongman competitions outside, but they're much quicker than powerlifting.
And also in 120 degrees.
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
People were going back to, like, their cars to sit there. And I think they ended up pushing a bunch of meets through so that there was just, like, no meets in the summer. And then, but it still gets, like, 90 degrees, 100 degrees in the spring and fall.
I will say, nationals for United States Strongman usually happens in the beginning of June. And 1 year it was in Louisville, Kentucky, and another year it was, oh, I know that one for sure, Louisville in June, super hot. And then United States Strongman Pro Women's Worlds was in Memphis, Tennessee in September. So again, really hot outside, and both of those shows were on their, like, they both have these, like, streets that are, like, they have like live music, and they like, you can't really drive through them, so they did it there. So in Louisville, it's 4th Street. And so you're like on concrete in the sun. It's so bad, dude.
That's brutal.
Yeah, and I don't mean to sound like a pansy, but...
No, it's true. Like, yeah. And I'll digress here in a moment, but like, swim meets, like, you know, at outdoor swim meets, always, 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 they're like, get into the shade, like, get in the shade right now, like, because it drains you of your energy. You just don't even realize it. That's the thing. But
not to mention, we don't want skin cancer around these parts.
Yeah. Well, moving on to who would have gotten second if it was scored in dots, that is Dr. Ash Contorno. She was another lifter who, I mean, it's amazing that they placed this high and didn't have the day that they wanted. But she was originally contending and focusing on her bench. She was going for a record with her second attempt.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and it seemed like just genuine like missed grooves. Like her strength is there, and I think we all know it. Mm-hmm. It just didn't happen that day. Yeah. So, it was still a dots PR for her, and she PR'd her squat with 485 pounds. So she was very positive, all smiles. Everybody knows Dr. Ash. She was, she was very positive, but she posted to her story. It was funny. It was like, I suck. And I was like, hey, now.
First of all, no, you don't.
Be nice.
Second of all, would you say that to your best friend?
No? Exactly.
Okay. Don't say it to yourself.
Yeah. So then if we go to Wilkes, Yelena, she got second. So in real life here, she got second.
So if it was dots, she would have been third.
Yes.
But with Wilkes, she got second.
Yep.
Understood.
Yes. Yeah, we're bouncing back and forth here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what's uncontended and would have been the same regardless is Miss Naomi Shepherd. She would have gotten first, whether it was dots or Wilkes. She ended up getting a 1,322-pound total. That's 50 pounds for PR on her total.
Damn.
And her wrapped squat was definitely her strongest lift of the day with a 38-pound PR. So... way to go. She left zero question in it, right?
Yeah.
Regardless of how you slice it.
Whatever coefficient you use.
Yeah, she deserved it. So way to go, Naomi.
Well, and also Kirsten Scurlock got that squat she was coming back for, right?
So I'm so embarrassed. I have to issue a redaction.
All right, go ahead.
No, we don't have our notes from the last episode pulled up. But I thought that she was coming back for... another raw squat. But no, she actually came back wrapped. So she actually put 50, and now I'm just spitballing here, but she put 50 pounds on top of what would have been her third. So I think she ended up doing a wrapped squat at 650.
Damn.
When she had missed the raw at 600. So I totally misjudged what was happening and ate my words, but that's all right.
It's okay.
Sometimes that happens. Let me be clear. Everything I predicted was wrong. Every single thing did not happen the way that... I mean, a lot of people definitely did not have their best days, but like I said, you know, it happens. Sometimes that happens, and you get those stars that gotta show you what they've got, you know. So
yeah, and anything can happen on meet day. You never know what the conditions are going to be like. You never know what the equipment's going to be like.
True. Yeah,
you never know what the other lifters are going to do,
especially at these big meets. So like at a local meet, you can usually like go check out the gym a couple weeks in advance, get to know their bars.
It's a very you kind of thing, but continue.
So
it's not something I have ever thought to do. I could learn from that for sure.
Yeah, no, just like go and check out like the back room, check out how you think that they're gonna lay it out, you know. Don't be friggin' weird about it, but like but maybe take a look at, oh okay, they only have one Texas deadlift bar. And then they've got a bunch of off-brand deadlift bars. Okay, I'm going to be warming up on a deadlift bar that is not going to be what I'm competing on. Like, things like that, if you can prepare yourself mentally for, it can give you a huge heads up. Well, that does not exist at meets like this unless you know the meet director. So.
Right. Yeah. More on the warm-up thing later when we get to the meat of the episode, MEAT. but I do think, like, if I were to do a powerlifting meet, in the Portland, Vancouver area. The two main gyms that put on powerlifting meets are Hardcore Barbell and Generation Strength. Mm. Kabuki sometimes as well. All three of those gyms I have trained at and I'm familiar with, and so I would know exactly what the conditions would be like.
Yeah, exactly. Even just like mentally being able to envision your lifts and knowing what that environment looks
right,
like.
Yeah.
Huge, huge.
And the familiarity of the people. That's why, you know, I love local competitions. You have people that you know, you have an environment you know, you have weather that you know, just unmatched vibes.
I mean, I said this last year, I was like, my next meet will be local. Right. And then I ate those
you're
words.
Flying to wherever you're flying, Cincinnati, right?
Cincinnati and then D.C.
Right. Yeah.
But next year, you'll see
but
me.
You've competed local. In Ohio before, so.
Yeah, but that was Columbus. This is Cincinnati, so. Sure, same.
Similar
yeah,
vibes. Similar. It's Ohio. No offense. Maybe a little bit of offense. Like Ohio is Ohio.
Dash.
Well, speaking of local things, the news that I wanted to share, one of two things. So Official Strongman, which is the promoter of World's Strongest Man, the World's Strongest Man, that is the one that's on TV, but then also the Official Strongman Games, which is where all of the World's Strongest Woman competitions happen, as well as the World's Strongest Man competitions for the weight class athletes. They announced a regional qualifying system for the United States. So in the past, before COVID, they always had like a U.S. regional in like North Carolina on the East Coast. And now they're doing one in the Southwest in June and one in the Pacific Northwest in August.
Ooh.
So that will be my next contest. It's on August 20th in Tacoma, Washington.
Oh, nice.
So speaking of local meets, it's great because it's going to be put on by a gym that I've been to before, by people that I know. It's in weather that I know. I don't have to fly across the country. There's not a time change. So I'm really pumped. But yeah, it's really nice to finally have a competition like that on the West Coast, because they don't Official Strongman hasn't done a ton on the West Coast because of the international competitors. But yeah, so they have that regional qualifier. That's my next contest, so August 20th. And then another little cool fun tidbit of news that we saw on the internet. So Rob Kearney, World's Strongest Gay on Instagram. Mm-hmm. He's the only openly LGBT World's Strongest Man competitor. He has competed at World's Strongest Man more than once. He is prepping for the Arnold Pro. The Arnold Pro Strongman competition is the biggest strongman competition as far as money goes for men right now. I think World Ultimate Strongman is coming up. Anyways, he posted about his prep for the squat aspect of the Arnold, and he hired a female coach to coach his squat, Katrina. And I wanted to just share that because I think it's the first time a World's Strongest Man competitor has ever publicly had a female coach. I do know that Kevin Ferris had some coaching done by a former partner, but I don't think he was ever very public about it. But yeah, so Rob Kearney is being coached by Katrina Bielomiza. Katrina is a really good equipped powerlifter, and at the Arnold they can use equipment for the squat. So wearing a suit and wraps. But yeah, so World's Strongest Man competitor openly using a female coach. Super awesome. So those are my two little news tidbits.
And might I say, I'm not going to go on too big of a rant here, but it's just, it puts me in awe of the inequality there. You know, I talked about wanting to hire a female coach, and I still do. I made the choice I did just because of the situation I was in. Mm-hmm. But, I feel like there's just so many more male voices as coaches, but there's so many qualified female coaches out there.
Mm-hmm.
So just putting it out there, you know, look around maybe a bit, because I think the male coaches are a lot more predominant online, whereas women kind of count on the word of mouth and stuff. Mm-hmm. So just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, my partner and I have the conversation a lot of, you know, what's the percentage of strength sport athletes who are male who have female coaches versus female athletes who have male coaches? And it's probably pretty egregious. I don't really know that there's a reliable way to get actual data on that. But then, you know, it also, that goes all the way down to personal training, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
How many men would be willing to be coached by, or to be trained by a female personal trainer versus women who are willing to be coached by a male? And why is that?
Yeah.
You know?
Hmm.
So I think it's something for us to keep talking about in strength sports. And I think also when I think of females who do bodybuilding or who are doing weight cuts, a lot of times having a female who has the experience of like having female hormones and such can make a huge difference for what you're being coached through.
No, it's a great point. Even with strength sports, you know, strength does undulate throughout the month a bit. And for some people, it's more drastic, you know. I've had a client who, it was very extreme because her period was so painful and the bleeding was so severe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, if your PMS is awful.
Yeah.
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 And
if you haven't been through that, you just don't. You can't empathize.
Yeah. And a lot of times, and this is something that like male coaches can learn about too, but like female recovery looks different.
Yes.
And
it looks different throughout the different lifts.
Yeah. Yeah. And females, statistically speaking, can do more reps at a higher percentage of their one rep max. Now, the heavier in weight that women get, the less that they can do that. So like me as an open super heavyweight, my capacity to do that compared to like 114-pound lightweight lifter is different. But yeah, just like little things that experientially women often are going to know
at
more
about.
At
least be able to relate to.
Yeah. Well, kind of that leads well into, you know, if we're talking about competition, what we want to talk about this episode, which is how do you run a meet?
Yeah,
or a competition. How do you run a strength sport competition? In particular, we're going to talk about powerlifting meets and strongman competitions because those are our two main sports here.
And I'll go ahead and just right off the top, I have never ran a meet. We are doing this from the competitor's lens. So if you are a meet director and you want to be on and like talk to us about this, let us know, you know.
And I'll also note that I've volunteered at, you know, probably close to a dozen powerlifting meets and strongman competitions. So I've seen ones ran really well and ones ran really poorly.
Yes, same. Yeah, we've been working at them. We've just never directed one.
Right.
But.
Yeah.
We'll see. So we kind of talked about this earlier, talking about going and scoping out different gyms to get a feel for what the warm-up room would look like. But what should it look like? What would be the ideal warm-up room for you?
An ideal warm-up room, A, has enough space, right? I think one of the hardest things that I've experienced in a powerlifting meet, we'll talk about powerlifting first and then I'll talk about strongman, is just not having enough space for all of the lifters, all of their stuff, and all of the warming up.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in meets where the room to put your stuff is different from the room where you warm up, and I do enjoy that to an extent, but depending on the size of the meet and where it's at and like how many spectators and people around there are, sometimes it gets nerve-wracking to leave your stuff unattended.
Yes.
That I hate the fact that a lot of times a lot of my anxiety on meet day comes from the fact that I'm worried that I'm going to get stuff stolen.
I mean, I had stuff stolen at the Kern.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Like, it can happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think enough room.
I'm just going to piggyback off of the enough room thing. I think that there should be enough room for the lifters and their coaches and handlers.
Mm-hmm.
Handlers being a buddy. They could be somebody else's coach. They could just not be a coach at all, but they help you through meet day.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they should predict. Just those people. And there should not be any bystanders who are allowed back in the warm-up room.
Right.
If you're not actively handling and helping, then, you know, get out. And as a meet director, appointing somebody to specifically monitor that is really important, because you can't accurately predict how much room to dedicate to a warm-up room.
Right.
If, like, there's a
everyone
bunch of people who are spectating.
Yeah, I will say, when I powerlifted at the Arnold, there was a particular Instagram famous lifter who was there, and this was the COVID Arnold, right? This was the 2020 Arnold where they were not allowing a ton of people in, and this individual still had a posse with them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That somehow all, and like fanboys and fangirls, mostly fanboys, because it was a male lifter. And it was so annoying because we would be trying to get to a platform and all these people would be around.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was frustrating for sure.
So speaking of all the platforms and the warm-up equipment in the back, you want to have enough bars.
And enough plates. You want to have
enough plates. Yes. Yep. That's an important one. And enough benches, enough deadlift platforms. But what I mean by enough is in relation to the number of lifters who are lifting. So if you're at a local meet and there's only, you know, 40 lifters and four flights, you could probably get away with like two of everything, you know? Mm-hmm. That's not terrible, five lifters yeah. each. But when you get into those higher level meets or like nationals where it's just a bunch of people or the Arnold, you need more bars because you have a bigger array of strength, first off, mm-hmm. and you have people who are just going through potentially two platforms at a time, you know? So mm-hmm. keep it relative to the number of people who are lifting. And I lost the train of thought.
Well, I'll just continue, and then if you think yeah. of it, jump in. You know, one thing that I really appreciated at the Arnold was I did the XPC meet, not the USAPL.
I did the USAPL. Yeah. same year.
Yeah, yep. That's basically how we became friends.
Basically, yeah.
But the XPC was a monolift squat meet, mm-hmm. and they had monolifts available for us in the back to warm up on, and I thought that was fantastic. And I don't think that the athletes should come in expecting that.
That's monolifts a nice to are have.
Huge.
Yeah.
Like size wise, right? And yeah. weight wise. Mm-hmm. And they're a bitch to move. And they're expensive. And mm-hmm. so especially if it's a local meet, they might only have one monolift.
Yeah.
I also wanna talk about behavior in the warm up room. I know we're gonna talk about like general rules of athlete behavior later, but I think since we're talking about warm up rooms, I wanna talk about it anyway. I wanna say it's really good for lifters to behave in a way that recognizes that no lifter is more important than the other lifter, right? No one's weights are more important. No one's warm-ups are more important than the other. We're all trying to stay safe and healthy, and a proper warm-up is what keeps us safe and healthy. And so I love it when athletes are cooperative about warm-up rooms and warm-up spaces. So if we're all warming up for the deadlift, we kind of take jumps together, and you kind of like segregate into different weight classes so that, you know, relatively speaking, we're all getting the weights that we need. I really appreciate athletes who behave that way.
And I'll say, I just regained my, so the Futures Female podcast, mm-hmm.
Futures Female Powerlifting
podcast. Yeah. They just had a short episode or mini-sode that they released, and they also touched on this. So go check them out. Oh, yeah. They're really lovely. Mm-hmm. Listen to their most recent episode as well. But they also touch on this same, like the etiquette back there mm-hmm. of just respecting your fellow lifter.
Yeah.
So
I want to talk about strongman warm-up rooms or lack thereof.
I was going to say, I didn't know y'all had those.
No, we don't. That's the thing. So you cannot expect there to be a warm-up room when you go to a strongman competition. Sometimes you get really lucky and they have a section mm-hmm. or an area and they have equipment set up for you. But generally speaking, it's not competition spec equipment, right? So the log is going to be a different brand, or, you know, you might have an axle deadlift, but you only have a barbell to warm up on. Mm. There's usually less equipment. And so when you're going into a strongman competition, you can't like be angry at the promoter for not providing more, because it's not the culture of strongman. And also you should go in knowing how to warm up with body weight and with bands if you need to. Mm. A lot of times there's like one of each for each weight class of implements and stuff, or there's like lighter options. So I think if you can get your hands on a stone, a sandbag or whatever, do it. But yeah, and I think as far as athlete etiquette goes with strongman, a point of improvement improvement that I could see in people is being more cooperative, being less self-important or important of your athlete, and then also giving each weight class the time that they need to warm up. I think a lot of my experiences, men, they compete after us. So like all the women go and then all the men go, and the men will start warming up when we're still warming up and kind of push us out. And I'm not trying to be overly critical, but I think it's a point of improvement that we could make in the community.
And that does happen, especially as, you know, the heavier women in powerlifting, that does start to happen. And that's when I look to my handler, our coach, like, if I can figure this out and be a bitch so I don't have to be, because I will.
Yeah. Like, oh, absolutely.
And, like, you know, there's lines, you know, of like, no, that's fine. Like, I understand you've got to do you, I've got to do me. But, like, if somebody crosses that line, don't be afraid to either say something yourself, or if that makes you uncomfortable and that's making you too anxious, turn to the people who are handling you, because that's a part of their job. Like, when you're handling someone, you are defending their space. You are making sure they have everything they need, and ask your handler to step in, because like, that's a part of it. That should be a part of the expectation, especially if you're using a paid handler. 100%.
Yeah. I've never had a paid handler, but I definitely, And you know, if you are a handler, don't be excessive, you know, like, again, don't act like your athlete is more important than the others. Advocate in the right way.
Yes. Advocate. That's a nice
idea. I've had situations where, you know, I was treated poorly by a handler and I didn't feel like I deserved to be treated poorly.
I like what I've seen to be the most effective is just explaining your like logic string of like why you think that the lifter should have priority in this moment. And usually that settles it.
Right. Like, yeah.
Because one of the logic strings is going to be more effective. Like more. Yeah. It's going to make more sense than the other.
Logic works.
I mean, that's what my old coach did. I went to I love Ironmongers meets, but it happened at Ironmongers. And he just took the other coach aside and he was like, here's why I think that my athlete needs to have that bar right now. And he like explained like, I'm going to be, you know, lifting at the end of this and she's going to be lifting at the beginning of this. So it's actually in your athlete's best interest to wait and hit this number then. And the other coach was like, oh yeah, sounds great.
Yeah.
And like backed off. So yeah, usually just explaining where you're coming from and how it can work for both of you is a good time. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah. No, yeah. And, you know, kind of along those lines, lifters and coaches should be made aware of the rules. I think, first of all, going into a competition, you and your coach and your handler should be reading the Federation's rule book, should be reading what the promoter has written in the registration, and have read any rules for the competition that have already been posted somewhere.
Read all your fine print. Come educated.
Yes. Yeah. Usually a powerlifting meet, and always for a strongman competition, they'll have some sort of rules meeting beforehand. They'll go through the lay of the land. In strongman, it's really important because each event is so different, and each contest has different rules for different events, right? So one axle overhead press, they might allow belt clean, and one they might not. But if you're going to run a powerlifting meet or a strongman competition, you should do a rules meeting beforehand.
And yeah, and I mean, from the athlete's perspective too, I've been to dozens of meets, right? Every single time I go, I find it beneficial. Like every time I not necessarily learn something new at this point, but I'll be like, oh yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah. Like, thanks for bringing that up. That was a nice refresher. Like, at no point do I think that you're too good to miss the rules meeting. Now, if it comes into a thing of prioritizing, like, I don't know, eat or go to a rules meeting, maybe.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I just am going to say right here, like, no one is too good to not go to the rules meeting.
Right.
It can be helpful, you know?
Yeah. The only time I've ever missed a rules meeting is when my weight cut took longer than I wanted it to, and I like needed to be at home drinking water.
Well, and that's when you should like have a handler or have a pal there, because what they'll also usually tell you is the length of breaks that they're taking. So like oftentimes, especially if there's a monolift involved, there's going to be a 10-20 minute break between squat and bench so they can set up the bench rack. And that's where they should be announcing those times so you can plan your day.
Yeah. Yep.
I've been to meets where they don't, and that's a pain because you have no idea what to plan for.
Yeah. And, you know, as a promoter of a show, if you want your athletes to meet your expectations, you need to outline the expectations ahead of time.
That's just like a life thing. But right, yeah.
Boundaries and expectations, my friends.
Which, well, speaking of, general rules of athlete behavior.
Yeah. So, what would you recommend if I'm a newbie going to a powerlifting meet? How would you tell me to behave?
I think like the number one word that just keeps on ringing in my head is being respectful. Mm-hmm. Like being gracious, respectful, kind, like all of those positive words, but respect is number one for me. So no matter if you're confused, if you're frustrated, I was on my first meet, always approaching people with respect and understanding that you might not know the reason behind the answer they give you, and they might not have time to tell you it right now, but mm-hmm. respecting their time, respecting their guidance, like I think it all boils down to respect.
Yeah, absolutely. I think being gracious if you win or lose, or mm-hmm. if you get a red light that you don't think you deserved, nothing sucks more than someone who like gets a big lift and, you know, they get their white lights or whatever, but then they're just a jerk afterwards, you know? There are so many people that are working to make it that day that you can hit that lift. You should, you know, recognize that they're usually making a sacrifice for you by volunteering for this 100% work at this meet. In strongman, there's a lot more changes in rules than there mm-hmm. are in powerlifting. Right? Like powerlifting, the rules are
set for each federation. Yeah. Check your federation's rules.
Yes, yeah. But there are times when you might think that there's a different judge for each lane or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there are times when you might think that your judge got your time wrong, or that they didn't give you the down call fast enough, or they gave someone else the down call too quickly. I had an experience at my first World Strongest Woman where I got all of the sandbag tosses over the bar, and my judge said that I only got 4 of the 5, and I had it on video. Ooh. And so I very respectfully went up to her and I said, hey, I think I got this. And she said, oh yeah, that was a mistake. And then we together went to the promoter and we changed it on the score sheet. And I did it in a kind and gentle way, and they changed it, right? Mm-hmm. I've seen people get really angry and try to show a judge a video and the judge is just not responsive to it. Yeah. And sometimes that might happen anyway, even if you are kind. But generally speaking, kindness is met with kindness.
Yes. So I'm actually going to skip one ahead because I think it perfectly aligns.
Oh, yeah.
Contending lifts or arguing lifts. So this also happened to me right when I was at the Kern.
Hmm.
They overloaded and misloaded. So like it was an extra 5 and an extra 2.5 on the sides. And so I barely made my first lift, but I was actually lifting like way more. And I immediately jump up, and they just immediately, it was a very great crew that day, and they like immediately started changing weights. And I was like, that didn't feel right, you know. And I like went to the judge at the moment and was like, hey, like what just happened? And she was like, I don't have time. I went to the main score table and I tried to tell them something was wrong. Very rude. They were very rude to me. And I was like, okay, so then I went to walk away, whatever, and my buddy ended up getting video. And so I had video of at least the one side that was misloaded. And so I brought it back to them, and I was like, hi, like, you know, again. And this is not going to be a surprise to the meet director because she ended up getting involved. again, I was not, respected in my contention, which you're entitled to. So I went to the meet director, and I tapped her shoulder and showed her what happened, and she said, she went back over to them and said that if I wanted to get a fourth attempt, I could get a fourth attempt based on the rule book. And at that point I was so fried. I was like, I don't even want it. I don't know why I'm even arguing this. Like, screw it.
It's the principle. But
it's a principle of the matter. Yeah. So, I mean, that was a learning thing for me too, of like, you need to have evidence of whatever happening, like you just coming over and yelling about it isn't going to change anything. Yeah. So that first off, and then different federations have different rules for this. Mm-hmm. But for example, USAPL, they have a panel of judges at meets that are, I think, above state level or state level and above or something, where it's three additional judges that are watching every single lift, and they write down by themselves whether they agreed with it. They don't change anything. They don't overrule anything. But if you disagree with whatever you're red lighted on, you can go over to the judges panel and argue the lift. And then if they all three gave you white lights, boom, you have a good lift now. So just being aware of your federation's rules and how you should be approaching, that was a learning thing for me. Like, I understand now why he was so rude to me, because he was like, what do you want me to do with that?
you know? Yeah.
So, but yeah, so just something to keep in mind is like, there are different rules for that in federations.
Also, I'm now learning that powerlifting has so many more rules and stopgaps than strongman does, which is fine. But I think also this, you know, goes to show that also, let me say one more time. As an athlete or a coach or a handler, you shouldn't be crowding, for instance, the score table or the judges table, because it's a very stressful job. I've done it. I've done the data entry at a meet before, and it's really, it's stressful. And if you have people around you, it increases your level of agitation. But then also, if you're crowding around the table, you're making it difficult for lifters, A, to even come over and give their next attempt numbers, but also B, come and, you know, have a conversation about, hey, I think this went wrong. So don't crowd the score table, don't crowd the judges, and lose and win gracefully.
Well, an athlete expediter, like, their number one assignment is to not mess up people's attempts. That is I think it's one of the most important volunteer roles, because obviously it can make or break an athlete's day. So it makes sense why it'd be an anxious role to fill. So just understand, like, if you come over to them with anxiety, you're only going to be met with more anxiety.
And we're all human. There are going to be misloads. If you're loading or telling people what plates to load over and over again all day,
it gets exhaustive. You're going to mess up.
And it's fine.
This is not something we wrote down, but being hopefully able to staff your meet and have enough volunteers to switch people out. So I saw the Ghost did a great job of this, constantly switching out the people who are loading. I think that there's definitely a line of you get into a groove and that's a good thing and you don't want to disrupt it, but then, you know, you start to get complacent. Then an interesting thing that we didn't write down, but rotating judges. Something that happened and has happened at quite a few meets is changing a judge mid meet, let's say. So the first two flights have one judge for bench, and then the second two flights have a different one. And the first one calls a really short pause, and then the second one calls a really long pause. And that's sports, baby. That's sports. But if you are a meet director, I would caution you to try to keep the same judge for all three attempts for each lifter, because there's nothing worse than going out there, getting your first two with a medium pause, and then coming out for your third, you know, making a jump accordingly, coming out for your third, and then you build a tent on your chest. So just that would be my recommendation, because they have to switch every once in a while. You know, there's rules around it. But if you can plan
do
it
by
it,
flights or whatever.
And exactly.
Yeah. In strongman, so I'll just talk about World Strongest Woman official strongman games, because that's my most recent competition. I think we had four lanes going at a time, so that's four different judges for each event, and sometimes one judge gives a faster down call than another, and in particular, there is one prolific coach online who has been insisting that his athlete would have done better had one athlete had a better judge, and what, you know, like that kind of thing. And like Britt said, that's the sport.
Sports baby.
It's judged by humans. Yeah. It's not judged by robots. And sometimes you get a really fast on-call and sometimes you don't.
Well, and the thing is sometimes it can not be a good thing. I've had too fast of calls on my bench where I'm like, I wasn't to my final spot now. And if I move farther down,
then I'm effed.
Yeah. So so it can go both ways. You know, I feel like we always hear about one way, but, you know, equally, you know, you could have a lifter who's put in a disadvantageous position with their deadlift if they're called too early or something,
yeah,
you know?
So, yeah.
Just keep it in mind. Yeah. They're humans. Yes. Dedicating their time, taking time away from their families.
Right. And, you know, I had a really difficult situation happen at World Strongest Woman with my yoke height, right? It was completely wrong. And I never went to the promoter about it. I never posted about it online. Obviously, I've talked about it on the podcast, but that's because I can give it nuance.
Yeah.
But I never, ever would blame anyone for that.
Well, and think of it this way, right? No meat director woke up and was like, you know what? I feel like being a bitch today, specifically to Jessica Putwood.
Right.
Like, no.
Right.
No. Nobody ever did that. Right. Like, yeah. I promise nobody has malicious intent for you.
Exactly.
And, you know, if they do, let karma sort that out.
Yeah. Or, you know, like, there are official channels through which you could make a complaint that. But, you know, yelling about it on your social media is not going to do anything. No. Okay, so if I'm going into a powerlifting meet, how can I expect them to set up the flights? Like, and also, what's a flight? Let's start with that.
Yeah, no, fair enough. So a flight, if you've competed in other sports, is like a heat or
That's all I know. A round.
I don't know. Regardless, right? It's a group of athletes that are going to be paired together and completing the exercises at the same time. Mm-hmm. For obvious reason, if you have a meet that has 40 lifters, you can't have all 40 lifters do their first squat and then come back to the top of the roster again and then do all of them through again. You'll be waiting 45 minutes between your attempts. Yeah. So what they do is they typically divide it into like 9 to 12 lifters, roughly. And then they'll take you through all three attempts for squat. And then you'll go to flight B and they'll do all their attempts in C, D, and then start back at the top for bench, right? Mm-hmm. So that's flights. The way that flights are ordered is, I guess the way that flights are divided is inconsistent in powerlifting. Mm. So some meets will do it by openers, 100% period. I don't care if you are 52 kilos and your opener is much more than an 80 kilo lifter, like, you go after. Mm-hmm. Other ones just do by weight class initially when they like organize the flights, and by gender. So it'll be just straight up, your first weight class is your, what would be like your lightweight women, mm-hmm. second one, middleweight to heavyweight women, and then the men mm-hmm. and their mm-hmm. stuff, right? Whereas we're actually starting to see like a new trend where they're dividing those flights based on openers and projected totals, basically. So mm-hmm. That way the spotters and loaders are doing a lot less work, right? They're not having to adjust as much between different flights.
Yeah.
So now you're seeing mixed, it's kind of cool. You're seeing mixed flights where there'll be lightweight or even sometimes middleweight men competing with middleweight and heavyweight women. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty friggin' neat, if you ask me. And I think it makes the most sense, and it's safer for everybody involved. You know, the less weight that you have to move up and down and up and down and up and down, the better. So that's how you divide your flights. Then the order of the flights. So the order of the flight is always going to be from the lightest weight to the heaviest weight. So for, you know, your attempt selection number one, lightest to heaviest, easy peasy. Well, when you come back for your second attempt, the order could be different. It's going to be reordered by lightest to heaviest again. So if you get, let's say, your fourth on the first attempt, that does not necessarily guarantee that you're fourth on the second attempt. I've seen people make crazy jumps in the order, like myself included, going from like fourth to like 10th. So just something to keep in mind, you know, and as you're making your selections, that can also be a part of strategy with your coach of like starting really light and then making a bigger jump so that you have more time to rest. It's been done before. So
when I've powerlifted, I've been very conservative about my opening numbers because I want to get on the board, and powerlifting is something that I'm not as experienced at. And so I just know that there's a higher possibility that I might mess up. And so, for instance, my last powerlifting meet was the Arnold in 2020. I had some openers that were lighter than women who were lightweights, and I was an open heavyweight competitor, right? And then my second and third were way above. And it definitely, I didn't do it to get more rest time, but I got more rest time. And honestly, it hurts the ego a little bit, right, at first.
Well, and also, I mean, personally, I have a really rough time making that big of jumps, too. Mm. You know, it could be a weight that I've hit a million times, but if I make, like, a bigger jump than I'd usually make in warm-up, it can also throw you off.
Right, so I've
literally seen lifters, and I don't recommend this, but I've seen lifters go back to the weight room and hit a rep in between. But yeah. I don't recommend this approach. I've seen it before.
And, you know, it's definitely not for everyone to be super conservative on their opener, but if you're a nervous Nelly like me, it works. In strongman, more often than not, so first of all, flights are divided by gender and weight class because everyone, let's say all of the middleweight women are lifting the same weights, right? So it's not like powerlifting where you're choosing what weights you're doing unless you have a max event. But even when they do a max event, they give you like a lowest starting number that you can start with. And then you can jump in when you want. Sometimes it's they do it like powerlifting where you only get three attempts. But generally speaking, you're divided by your gender and your weight class, because it doesn't make sense to do it any other way. But the way they order each of your flights is often done by order of entry. It's kind of an incentive, right? So the earlier that you sign up for a competition, the later you get to go. So the last person to sign up has to go first, and the first person to sign up gets to go last.
I had no idea.
And then...
Well, that pulls in strategy then, right? Because you get to watch what other people do.
Yes. And you don't get to sit back and see if other people are going to sign up for the contest. I mean, you can, right? And then you just have to go sooner. But there's not a lot of incentive. I will say, as someone who has to kind of like budget to register for shows and stuff, sometimes it sucks. I'm like, oh, well, I have to wait till my next paycheck to register for this meet. So yeah. I guess I'm going first. A lot of times after the first event, everything is reordered based on performance. So the person who got first place in the first event then gets to go last in the next one.
But what's so interesting is that could just be another person's weakest lift, and then they're super strong at the second one. That's interesting.
So it again rewards you for doing well. And if you're, the more well-rounded you are, the more often you get to go later. And it definitely makes a difference if you have a rep, like a log press for reps or a deadlift for reps, and a speed event, right? Because you can see, okay, we're doing, I mean, it's happened to me more than once, we have a deadlift to rep out and I'm going last, and I'm watching every single person to see how many reps do I have to do.
Yeah.
Because if I don't have to completely blow my wad, I won't, right? If I have to just like, if I'm first and I have to just do 20 deadlifts,
I mean, you're gonna max out because
you don't know what else you're gonna
get up against.
Similarly, for some people it's helpful to know, okay, well, you know, the fastest person so far has completed this in 15 seconds, so I want to try to beat 15 seconds. That one's a little bit harder to replicate, like there are biological limitations, but yeah, so that is definitely the strategy, and it's reordered based on each event, so it's not cumulative. It's like, okay, so the second event I get first, I get to go last on the third event, but in the third event, I get last, so then I have to go first in the fourth event. Now, sometimes they will do a cumulative reorder for the end. So they will place you based on where your rankings are at in the last event. So then you know, okay, I'm going second to last because of how it's ordered. And I want to make sure, you know, that I'm going all out so I can try to get, you know, first place. That being said, some larger shows are starting to not reorder because of like the math involved and the time involved to reorder. So you have 250 athletes. It's going to take you forever to reorder. So then you're stuck in competing in the order based on your entry.
Man.
But yeah, like I said, occasionally they'll order the flights by a starting weight for a max event or like heights. So if you have a yoke walk, they might do all of the lowest first and then move it up by height.
Which makes sense. Yeah. It's the same like premises.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Some people don't like that, but you know, if we're trying to be efficient. But yeah, that's generally speaking how strongman flights are ordered.
I had no idea. Thank you for cluing me in. That makes it more exciting too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So if you're running a meet.
Yep.
And on the competition floor or on the platform, all of a sudden someone is leaking bodily fluids, stress incontinence, peeing, getting a bloody nose,
throwing up everywhere,
themselves. What do you do?
Well, first off, your number one priority is cleanliness, but
sanitization.
Your other priority is it's totally normal, like not freaking out, not causing more drama or shame on that person, because that's a part of strength sports. Like that happens often.
Yes.
So, not allowing any behaviors that are shaming that in any way, for me, that would be like, get out, leave. If you're going to make fun of, especially, female lifters with stress incontinence, you can get out of this meet.
Yeah. And for some reason, getting a bloody nose while lifting has been glorified,
right?
While stress incontinence, peeing while under heavy load has been villainized, right? That's not the right word, but you know, it's been
stigmatized.
Yep. Yeah, right. neither of those is more unhealthy than the other for another person to have to touch, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There is a myth that pee is sterile. It is not, in fact, sterile.
No.
but it does not carry as many diseases as blood does. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, that is... That's interesting. Well, and more often than not, the blood's landing on the bar. The pee isn't.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, as far as cleaning up the pee, just getting a solid grade. I've seen bleach be used, but I don't think that's necessary. But, yeah, getting a solid grade, cleaner, disinfectant. Yeah. And then also I've seen people sprinkle chalk over it. That's chalk, not baby powder.
Right. Please don't put baby powder on anything.
Please. but, yeah, sprinkling chalk right all over it. And then regarding also resetting everything to how it was before, that just sparked a thought for me, is also cleaning the bar regularly, especially with deadlifts. You know, there could be baby powder residue on an area that somebody else grabs the bar at.
Yeah,
keeping that surface clean, just keeping everything as clean as possible for the lifters, within reason. You don't need to clean it between every single attempt, but you know, make sure that everybody is getting an equal shot at a good lift. Yeah. So.
And, you know, the two priorities there, I think, need to be A, treating all lifters with respect, no matter what bodily fluid comes out of them, and B, having enough supplies.
Yes.
In strongman, it's not just a platform. There's a whole, you know, sometimes there's a whole 50 to 100 yard or 50 to 100 foot, not yard, lane. And you need to make sure that you have the capability of cleaning up sweat or pee in the middle of that lane, for instance.
That's what I was curious about, especially the ones where it's like a ladder where you like run.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
so
a lot to clean up potentially. Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you're putting on a competition, you need to budget that in and you need to have the human power to clean it up. And also, never ever make the athlete clean it up. It's disrespectful and they're not there to clean up after themselves.
Yeah.
Literally, they paid to do this meet. Someone else is cleaning up after them.
Well, and so speaking of safety, that means having gloves available as well for the folks who are cleaning.
Yeah.
And then having a place for them to dispose of it. I've definitely run into that where it was like, we don't have gloves here. What are we doing?
Yeah.
So
also, you know, a first aid kit was good for people who have bloody noses or ripped open calluses or bloody shins, yeah, what have you. So
you just do is you just administer a tampon. like, what was that Amanda Bynes movie?
Oh, She's the Man.
Yeah. a classic. But
wait, is it She's the Man or Bend It Like Beckham?
No, Bend It Like Beckham is, I think, like a little bit later.
Got it.
But yeah, definitely a different movie.
Okay.
They're British. Oh, man. Well, so, all right. So we've gotten through the meat, let's say, right? And now we're looking at results. Mm-hmm. So I'll start with powerlifting, and you can fill us in on strongman, but how meets and competitions are ranked. So it can be a little confusing because there is best lifter within a weight class, best lifter within a weight class and category, and then best overall lifter. When you are registering for a meet, you can register as a teen, a junior, an open, a submaster, or a master. Yeah, so there's all of these different options if you're within those age categories.
In powerlifting.
But so let's say you are a master lifter, but you also feel competitive with the open lifters, you can register for both. You just have to pay extra.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
And you have to pay extra, which I have done before. I think I did it because I wanted some state records or something. But I mean, it is what it is. I'm gonna just leave it at that. So you can register for multiple things. So you could win multiple weight classes and categories because let's say there's 57 kilogram open and then 57 kilogram masters, you win both. Congrats, you're both. That does not make you best overall lifter, though. Best overall lifter is usually ranked by a coefficient, whereas within your weight class, it is based on total. It is 100% based on total. Even if you weighed in at the very bottom of your weight class and you got, you know, a much better total than somebody else, and your Wilks, let's say, is better than somebody else, but someone beat your total, you don't get to win your weight class. It's based on total within the weight class. Anyway, I digress. Overall, it's going to be based on a coefficient. So that's what we were talking about earlier with a Wilks versus a DOTS. There's a couple of other coefficients out there, like an IPF score, and then, you know, weightlifting has their own equivalent of it. That's how you win overall lifter, and that's how you get, like, the money and the prizes at these professional level meets. It's also how you qualify for a lot of those meets. So that's usually how it's ranked. But what about strongman?
In strongman, it's done by points earned for each event done in competition. Generally speaking, it's points are high, right? Mm-hmm. So first place in the first event, let's say there's 10 athletes, you get 10 points. If there's so five athletes.
It's not golf. It's the opposite of right.
golf. Right. Okay. I've seen it done with golf before.
Oh.
So lowest points wins.
Yeah.
But the most common is highest points wins.
I think it's the most logical.
Yeah. And the number of points is based on the number of athletes. So if there's five, you get five. If there's 20, you get 20 points. This means that in a bigger meet, there's often a higher point spread than in a lower meet, which can be interesting. I don't really know that that has any effect on anything. Also, if there's an event where there's like finals, so World's Strongest Woman, the Arnold, there's more than one day and only a certain number of people make finals, they often redo the points as if the other athletes weren't there. So let's say there's 10 athletes and five make it to finals. They take out those five athletes and re-rank you for each event, and you get points on each event.
Oh, okay.
And that is to keep any anomalies from skewing the points. Like, let's say I didn't make finals, but I have an insane deadlift compared to the other women in my weight class, so I was getting those 10 points. They're going to take me out of that so that I'm not skewing it.
Interesting.
Right? Which is an interesting thing to do because you can have like people who don't place top three affecting the top three. You could knock someone out of the top three if you happen to have one event that's better than your others.
Interesting.
So they're kind of trying to mitigate that as much as possible. But that it's pretty straightforward. I don't think you'll ever see a strongman competition not done by points. It's very similar to like track and field. And, you know, if it's done lower, it's just you flip that around. Yeah. So, you know, if I have 5 points because there's five events, I win because I got first in everything. but it makes more sense to do it the other way because if you zero, then you get 0 points.
Yeah, as opposed to what, like, I don't know, 100?
Yeah, like how do you, how do you quantify that? One thing that we wanted to talk about, which isn't something, I think this is a newer part of strength sports, but it's if you're planning a competition and you're going to have commentators either in person or on a live stream, how do you prepare for that?
Well, so I was going to say there's actually a difference between an announcer and a commentator. Yes. So like announcer is the person that you have in the room who's like hype manning for everybody there and is announcing what's on the bar. Mm-hmm. And getting all, you know, good vibes person, right? They're announcing when there's records, you know, they're that guy. Or woman. Guy, non-binary.
Human.
Exactly. Whereas a commentator is typically, they're making the assumption that you are also watching the screen that you... that they have access to. So you see all of the weights, you see the name.
On a live stream or a recording.
Yeah, yeah. On powerlifting, it's nearly always a live stream. But same. Yeah.
In strongman.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So they're assuming that you can see everything and they'll start, you know, giving you some background about why this lift might be important to the lifter if they've done their research. Mm-hmm.
And some powerlifting meets and strongman competitions, they'll give you an opportunity to tell them about yourself. So you can, when you're, registering for a meet, say, this is my first meet back after breaking my elbow, or this is my 15th competition, or this is my first competition.
I do this for work. They'll ask about personal details too. Yep. So yeah, they'll help you get to know the lifters. And they should also be, a lot of the time informing the viewer. So in the spirit of expanding the sport, they want to be explaining why everything is happening and why, you know, especially if there's confusion or if there's a call that has any arguments with it or anything like that. They're going to be wanting to walk you through exactly what's happening. If there's any like long delays, they want to educate you along the way. They definitely want to be friendly, but how do I even say this? Factual. They want to be factual.
Yep. As objective as possible.
There you go. Yeah.
As of recent, there have been some situations in commentating in both strongman and powerlifting where the commentating has left something to be desired. And I would say these rules can apply to the announcers too, depending on, you know, how much an announcer is doing. But like general rule of thumb, don't comment on someone's appearance. Don't be sexist.
Whoa, really high bar, Jess.
The bar slow is low. Down. In particular, there have just been commentators recently who have, you know, commented on women's nail color and hair color and what color their singlet is and what their makeup looks like. And, you know, certainly there are women who that matters to them and they are allowed to have that matter to them. But if you're commentating, the point is to comment on the lift and the performance and the training and the records and what have you, not the appearance. And were you commenting on the men's hair and the men's singlet and the men's nails?
Right? Yeah. Even if it's positive, you know, we've also heard it be negative. I mean, regardless, it's just best to stick to the facts, you know, and that should be entertaining enough if you're a good commentator. Yeah. Like if you know how to frame it correctly, that should be entertainment enough, in my opinion.
Yeah. And, you know, generally speaking, also, I know we talked about how stress incontinence is stigmatized, and we would like to change that. But also just at this point, do not comment on if someone has stress incontinence while they're lifting.
So I will say something that I do think that some commentators recently have done a great job of is usually when you have a YouTube stream, you also have an open comment section. So it'll have like a live chat, right? Like if you're a subscriber, you
can. That sounds terrifying.
Oh my God. I got really mad at myself for even looking the other day because the commentators were addressing like comments and concerns that were being raised on there. And I went through it and I was like, ugh, some of this is awful towards women. Yeah. Unsurprisingly, but, and I think that that can be at the discretion of the commentator about whether that's something that they want to do of policing the set, you know, the comment section or not. But I do think that it is a valuable opportunity to educate people, especially if you're having those, you know, comments specifically about stress incontinence or
an arch on a bench,
an arch, women taking drugs. Yeah, it was a minefield. I was upset. I almost went on a run. That's how you know it was bad.
That's really bad.
But no, yeah. So, I mean, I think that, that's my opinion. I think it's up to their discretion. And sometimes comments aren't even worth acknowledging. It's like, I don't even want to give that time or the, you know, calories, but sometimes it can be like genuine bro science, and this is an opportunity to, you know, be an ally and educate, you know, the guy who goes to 24 and really genuinely believes what he's preaching.
Right. So. Yeah. I have two thoughts. One, I think there's an opportunity there for the organizations or companies or what have you that put on these live streams to have someone in the comments also educating, you know, like have the username
like a moderator.
Like, yeah. Be like live stream moderator. And then you can be the person answering questions, holding people accountable, dispelling myths, all of that. That's an opportunity that
I think
people
could take. That's a great opportunity. That could be a remote opportunity,
too. Yeah. You know, there are so many Facebook groups and Reddit groups for strength sports that have moderators. I think a live stream could do the same thing. There are people who will do it for free because they're passionate about the sport. And then my other, you know, just note for commentators especially is, if you're not doing your due diligence on an athlete's background, just tread lightly. Try not to be disrespectful.
Yeah, just don't make any assumptions at all. 100% blank slate.
Yeah. Just because you haven't heard of someone doesn't mean other people haven't.
Yeah. And, you know, just being a curious mind and being able to, like, humble yourself and be like, you know, tell me more about yourself as opposed to, well, I know everyone and I don't know you.
Right, exactly. You know? It's just simply not true, right? Yeah.
And it also, I mean, put yourself in their shoes. Like, that's not a very good feeling. Wow, I just had the best day. And then this person comes around and says, yeah, who the fuck are you?
Right,
like, that's not a good feeling.
It sucks. And, you know, powerlifting and strongman and the other strength sports aren't supposed to be clicky, right? Yeah. It's supposed to be a situation where anyone can come in and do well and be celebrated for it.
That's the beauty of it.
And if just because someone is not social media popular doesn't mean that they're not a great lifter.
Or relevant, or a person.
And it doesn't make them an underdog, right?
100%.
Yeah.
It makes it exciting. It's almost like a dark horse.
Right. I love me it's a dark
cool,
horse.
Yeah, it's a cool you. Element.
I like to be a dark horse.
Yeah. I'm not good at that.
I haven't really yet, but maybe one day. Well, while we're offering unsolicited advice to meet directors and commentators, let's continue that train of thought. What are our suggestions? Britt, what are your suggestions that people can do to A, make meets more comfortable for women-identified folks, and B, more equitable for women-identified folks?
So, I mean, one of them we already touched on, right, is, and I think that this is going to be a bit more inclusive of our non-binary pals as well, is not ordering by gender and just ordering by the weights that you're lifting. I mean, dividing flights by the weights that you're lifting. Right. I mean, it's a very easy thing to be incredibly inclusive. Even if you are being forced to compete as your dead name or the gender you were assigned at birth, sex you were assigned at birth. That can be a really much more inclusive. Like, it can at least bridge the gap temporarily.
Right. Yeah.
It's not the solution. Let me be really clear, but it's just a really easy fucking way to be inclusive, my right. guy. Like, yeah, why?
Exactly.
Why not? You know? Yeah. And it just makes sense. And it's more safe for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. Truly, it is. The less times that you have loaders bending over and picking stuff up and then racking it on something, the safer it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's just facts, baby.
Yeah. And, you know, that made me think about restrooms. Mm, yeah. And I have two thoughts about restrooms. One is about equity and one is just in general. So I'll do the general one first. Have enough bathrooms available.
Have a dedicated athlete bathroom.
Yeah, yeah. I have been to competitions where there was one bathroom, like not even multiple stall, just like one bathroom with one toilet for all of the competitors and all of the spectators.
Usually, the standard is the indoor bathroom is for athletes, and then you get temporary bathrooms outside.
Yes.
For yep. the spectators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think another fairly easy way to make things more comfortable for non-binary folks and trans folks is some gender-neutral bathroom type situation, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever that might look like. Obviously, that's facility-dependent.
Yeah.
But that is just a way to make things a little bit easier for someone.
If you have an opportunity to, why not?
Yeah.
Also, it's just genuinely more efficient also.
Like, yeah.
Just, anyway.
Yeah. And then having female presenting judges or female judges and spotters and loaders and people at the score table or whatever, it doesn't have to be like all female, but yeah. you know, striving for equal numbers of yeah. Of genders, for instance, is a really great way to make females feel more comfortable.
So an interesting thing I'd like to hear your feedback on is I'm noticing a trend in a lot of meets where it's a bunch of women presenting judges who are only judging the women, and then it's like they do like a full change and have like a bunch of male judges judging the men, like, or the traditionally male flights. Like, how do you feel about that?
I would want to hear the reasoning. Yeah. I don't want to jump to conclusions and assume that it's sexism. But I would wonder why we are not having men be judged by women, yeah. right? And why we're not having women judged by men.
Yeah. Because the goal is not segregation.
Yeah, the goal is integration, right? Yeah. So why not have, you know, two and one and then one and two or what yeah. have you, you know?
100%.
Also, there's like definitely a trend of promoters seeking out intentionally young male loaders and spotters. At least in my experience.
Oh, no, I'm just...
anytime, yeah.
Oh, we didn't prep each other yeah. for any of this, so my facial reactions are, like, raw.
Like, yeah. every powerlifting meet I've been a part of has been all male loaders and spotters. And I know that, you know, that's not always the case.
You know what energy that gives me?
What?
Is...
I know, yeah.
in kindergarten, when the teacher is like, all right, boys, everybody go grab two chairs and move them. And you're like... Yeah, so I'm going to grab three.
Dude, that fucking happened
Save
to me.
Save your pay for the week.
That fucking happened to me in college.
Dude, I can remember the last time it happened to me. It happened at work.
Yeah.
Like, all the time, man.
Thankfully, I work in nonprofit and I work with really small staffs and everyone knows that I am the strongest person. but yeah, in college, it was a communications professor. I was taking like my one required communications class and mm-hmm. I was like, all right, I need all the strong men in the room to move the tables. And I was like, excuse me, I am the only nationally ranked thrower in this room right now.
Like, what are we talking about?
Of course, I'm like, you know, floating my own boat, but it was just like, yeah, well, like, just actually, like, don't yeah. be that it's guy.
Why not? Yeah. I mean, I work in construction, so you kind of, what's kind of funny is making the joke of, my favorite joke to make is like, muscles are here, and it's like the classic thing of like, you couldn't tell unless I flex my quads sort of thing, because right. I'm covering all my muscles, and then I'll be like, and then I'll like go to pick up something like outrageously heavy, and just watching like, their face go, oh, and I'm like.
You know the like emoji. You know like emoji where it's like the eye emoji, the lips, and
yeah,
then the eye
yes,
emoji.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of my favorite jokes. Yeah. I make it any chance I can.
but yeah, like trying to get some female loaders and spotters.
Yeah.
And like Women can spot men, you know, I've done it.
Well, it's also a height thing, you know. I would much rather be spotted, and I guess, I mean, I'm saying this as a woman, but I would much rather have somebody be spotted by somebody who's of similar size and weight than of the same gender. That doesn't matter. I would much rather have Jess be spotting me than
a 50-kilo
18-year-old. Yeah, 1,000,000,000,000% for personal reasons. But
yeah, oh, absolutely.
Also, just generally, you know? So,
yeah.
But all right. So we've talked about female judges, spotters, loaders, just general volunteers. What other opportunity do you see in competitions?
Cash money, baby. If you are running a competition and the male overall lifter is getting more money than the female overall lifter, you need to check yourself.
Especially in these sports, I feel like the entire argument of the MNBA makes more money than the WNBA. Right. It's dead, dude. It's dead. Because that's not factual in these sports, period.
Right.
Sit it down, because that one argument that you kind of had, that we could get into why it's not accurate anyway, is dead. It's dead. Right. So it just...
Not to mention, sir, you're not an NBA basketball player. I'm sorry.
MNBA.
You're not an MNBA basketball player. You're not an NFL player.
Yeah.
You are not Steph Curry. You're not Tom Brady.
No hops, no opinion.
Yeah. You're Joe Schmo who power lifts, and I love you, right? I have nothing but love for you, but the women deserve just as much money as you do.
1,000,000%.
The entertainment factor is just as much, if not more.
Well, and I'll just say this. Right now, a lot of people are saying golden era for women.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm seeing a lot more people be excited about the women, not to ever discount, you know, men's accomplishments, but we're here to support women, you know?
If we want to talk about other strength sports, we talked about this on our history of women's inclusion episode way back. That was episode six of season one.
Yeah.
Tia Claire Toomey has won however many CrossFit Opens. She makes more money. So first of all, CrossFit has equal prize money for the male and female winner. But she makes more money because she has more sponsorships. They've looked at her cumulative funds that she wins from the CrossFit Open. So there's your sign that men are not inherently more entertaining than women, because Tia is a female athlete who makes more money in sponsorships, aka companies find her more entertaining than her male counterpart.
If the corporate greed got it, dude.
exactly. So equal prize money, you know, if it's something where historically there's a fund or a pool where there's more for men right now, just start taking baby steps.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, just even removing that opportunity of segregating the pool.
Yeah.
Of saying.
Yeah. Just have one overall best lifter, for instance.
Or the place that they can fund, right? If you choose where your money goes as a sponsor and you choose to put it towards the men or the women, that's the meat allowing that opportunity to exist.
Yeah,
as opposed to just removing that opportunity altogether.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think this is a great opportunity to mention the Main Event Project.
Yeah, let's plug those girls.
Shameless plug. They are not paying us for this, obviously.
No, this is an unpaid.
This is people who we really appreciate. So the Main Event Project, they are working towards equality in weight class and pay in powerlifting for women, correct?
Yeah, so you might have noticed here recently in the last few months, almost every major federation added more women's weight classes. And again, we go into this in that history episode, but very brief. And I'm going to have the numbers wrong here, but it was something like women had 7 weight classes and men had 11.
Mm.
Just standard all the time. And for some federations, it went all the way up to 198 until you were super heavyweight.
Mm-hmm.
Some federations, if you weigh over 185 pounds, you're a super heavyweight. Yeah.
Oh, that is still the case in Strongman Corporation.
Is crazy sauce.
Yeah.
So
and Official Strongman, actually. Sorry.
No, you're all good. So these women got together and they really generated a lot of attention online. They ended up getting a petition going, and they ended up going way past their original goal, right? It was an absurd number of signatures. And you know, most of the federations listened. Some of them were a bit slower to mm-hmm. implement it, but they listened up.
So. Yeah. So now we have 100 kilo,
110. Some yeah. of them have 120.
Yeah.
Like, it and expanded. You know,
as someone who weighs more than 180 pounds by a significant amount, it's not necessarily fair for a 185 pound lifter to have to compete against me. Yeah. And it's leading women to cut more weight than they should.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
It's dangerous is what it is. Yeah. I am so thankful for it because it's allowed me to, like, and I've talked to them directly about this, like, them doing that basically removed my final excuse for an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. It really had me, like, look at myself hard in the mirror and be like, stop leaning on that. Like, allow yourself to grow.
Yeah.
So I'm very open about this. This isn't like a super raw moment. We'll talk about it on a later episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is bigger than just more weight classes. I think they have a vision for a handful of other changes as well. But nice. And they're also sponsoring the Women's Pro Am. So
nice. Well, and just in case anyone is wondering, their Instagram is literally the Main Event Project.
All one word.
All one word. No underscores or anything. If you want to follow them, we'll tag them in a post here in the coming week or so when this episode comes out. So you can follow them. Britt, where can they find you?
Oh, I got you, girl. yeah, on Instagram, it's bralifts. So it's BRUH_LIFTS. I am taking on new clients through April 1st. So... let nice. Me know. Shout out my DM. You want
to be coached by a badass lady? Go send Britt an inquiry.
Hey, Jess, quick cue. Where can they find you?
My Instagram is JESSKAH_P. I do not currently offer coaching, so don't ask me, ask Britt.
But we can point you in the direction.
Yes, I've got, especially if you're looking for female coaches and a few male coaches, I've got recommendations. So feel free to pop in my DMs or in the pod's DM. Our Instagram is FEMMESTRONGPOD. Thanks so much for listening.
Later days.